Good morning. Why are you here this early in the morning? But thank you for being here. Well, we almost decided to go get coffee instead of doing this because we thought nobody was going to come, but you are here, the few, the proud, the brave, clean, thrifty, reverent, quality, people that care about the kingdom, etc. What we're going to do is, I just did this presentation last week in St. Louis, and it's a pilot study to do a national study that I want to do here this year. And so we kind of did a little study with about 1,200 Church of Christ teenagers, and most of them are white. I did get a purposeful sample of African Americans in California at a Church of Christ conference there of predominantly 99.9% African American Church of Christ teenagers. And there are some very pronounced differences in black and white Church of Christ teenagers that we'll see tomorrow at the same time, same station. What I'm going to do this morning is just go through some kind of millennial stuff to get you thinking. I would also like to encourage you to have a piece of paper and a pencil, and if there's anything in your gigantic mind that you have that you would think would be an incredible question to ask on this national survey about our teenagers, I would love for you to write that down in English and give that to me today or tomorrow. Give it to Lee or Tim in the back. Actually, it's Cowboy Carl in the back. He has CDs for sale at the NCYM table. Did you bring any? Tomorrow. He'll bring some tomorrow. And some signs. I was wondering if you can kind of tell me how he's doing. Can you go over to his dorm and kind of wake him up and get him to go to class? And Sunday, if you're not doing anything, could you go by and wake him up and take him to church, you know? And I'm not lying. They do. Of course, I go, well, there's HIPAA laws and all that. I can't tell you squat. You know, call your son and ask him or something. I mean, I try to be more tactful than that. But, you know, it's weird how they hover over him. They have a been there, done that attitude, you know, and most of them have. I mean, our kids, at least in our fellowship, in our white churches, and not sure too much about, I'm just learning a lot about our black churches of Christ. I did a youth ministers conference last year for all black Church of Christ youth workers, and I was the only white person there, and it's just 200 of these people that love their kids like we do. They do things different than we do, methodologically and theologically even, kind of. But when you see the results of comparing black kids to white kids, Church of Christ kids, it's something's going on that I'm very interested in fleshing out in this national study. Well, let's try another slide here, Tim. Very good. Teens today are a jumble of contradictions. They struggle with doubt, yet remain righteously indignant. They are jaded yet hopeful. They want parents to take charge, believe it or not. They resent those who pay lip service to religious conviction. Let me tell you about contradictions. My two sons do musician stuff, and they've written about 20 songs, and they burn their own CDs and sell them and all that stuff. And I remember the first one they did, as teenagers will do, if you look at most teenagers' music that's not already on an iPod, if it's a CD, it's probably got the word mix on it. I mean, that should tell you a lot about their whole life and everything. But some kids at Memorial High School bought a copy of this, and they just started burning copies for their friends, as teens will do. And one of my sons was like, Dad, you know, they're stealing our stuff, you know, and all that. And I said, let's look at your stuff. You know, open it up, and there's a copy of Foo Fighters, and there's a copy. I said, whose is that? Well, Bill gave it to me. I mean, he bought the CD, and he can make me a... I said, that's stealing. Well, no, I mean, it's different. Well, why is it different? Well, those guys are rich. We're not. I mean, you know, and they don't, you know, the whole contradiction thing going on there, that it's okay for us, but not someone else. I would encourage you, if you've not read Unchristian, brand new book just out, Kinnaman and Lyons work for the Barna Group, and so they've got great research skills there. It's a three-year study that they went out and asked the last group of the generation before millennials, which would be X, and then the first group, the 1980s, guys about your age, to do this survey, and then they wrote this book. And it's scary because they're unchristian because why are you unchristian? That was the basis of the study. And you go through this, and you know, you may not agree with everything that they find. The scary thing in that book to me is the things that these not yet Christian kids that say they aren't going to become one say. They went to churches then and did the same survey with churched kids. And the scary thing is most of the church kids had the same attitudes that the unchristian kids have. They just go to church because we go to church. I mean, how many of you grew up and your dad said, as long as your feet are under this table, you're going to cut your hair and go to school and join the army and whatever else his deals were, you know, and go to church, you know, and that's kind of, you go because that's what you do. At least till you're, get a driver's license and then you drive somewhere and tell your parents you're going to church and you don't, but they think you're going there. Well, the bottom line is on unchristian, and are you guys going to do unchristian? Okay, I'll bring that back tomorrow. These kids that are not Christians said, we don't want to become a Christian because you're homophobic, you're hypocritical, and they list six things there. And you go down that list and you go, yeah, that's kind of us. And they're saying, we're not going to be a part of that. We don't want to be a part of that. You know, the thing I have to do when I look at that and say, okay, where would Jesus fall in this? Would Jesus be homophobic? He probably wouldn't be. You know, now we can do the he hates the sin but loves the sinner thing and all that. We typically, you know, if it's not on our agenda, we hate it and we crucify it and all. And this generation of kids will come up, and you'll see it tomorrow in the survey results. I think that it's the first generation to come along that they're not going to die on the hills that our parents died on, and maybe some of you are still, you know, caught up in. And I'm not messing with your convictions or whatever. But it's just not a big deal to them. Instrumental worship, women's roles, homosexuality, all of those things aren't a big deal to them in the sense that you drive a nail down and say, you know, I'm just going to die right here and y'all can burn me at the stake or whatever. Most of our church baptized kids would say homosexuality is wrong. But if that's your deal, I mean, if you want to be a lesbian, I mean, go for it. I mean, that's your deal. God bless you. You know, I'm not going to do it, but if you want to do it, I mean, you know. Whereas when I grew up, you know, if I found out, what's your name? Okay, we'll call her Carol. You know, if I found out that, man, I'd have a banner going, you know, Carol is a lesbian, you know, and we'd send her to hell, you know, and our kids aren't going to do that. They're not going to burn down abortion clinics and things like that, which will be interesting. Now, there's always going to be an anomaly. There's going to be somebody, the Montana bomber or whatever, those kind of guys. Well, hit us another one here quickly. You're watching our time? Okay. Empowering young people by giving them leadership roles in church ministries, including serving their peers, has magnified the relevance and impact of church in their lives. Unfortunately, in our fellowship, in most Protestant fellowships, our kids don't get that opportunity. We wonder why our kids don't come to big church. Think about it. It's not for them to start with. They have no buy-in into it. Occasionally, one of them might get to be on the Lord's table if he's got a tie. And we let them do that. At our church, I go to a very large church, and if you ever see a teenager up anywhere near the stage, it's a pretty rare thing. In May, when we do the goodbye senior thing or whatever they call it, some kid will get up and do a talk, and a kid will lead singing, and another one will lead a prayer. course, the girls don't get to do anything, and that's it. And then we wonder, I mean, think about that. You were in that church 5 years, and four out of, we have 400 teenagers in our youth group, so four out of 400 get a shot at being up front and doing something at big church. I mean, they're not invested in it. I mean, we don't teach them to be invested in it. We don't let them be invested in it. And so we sit and wonder, why are our kids leaving? I mean, they're just not connected to it. We might want to rethink that. Traditional ritual within worship has kept history alive for young people and sets church apart from their electronically stimulated world. One of the things that Christian Smith explores a little bit is high church and getting back to going to church, and you sit there very stoic, but you are tuned into the liturgy and things like that. I mean, words that we don't even use in our fellowship. At Oklahoma Christian, our ministry students that come in after their freshman, we do freshman seminar together with those students. And this year, we did to end that time together, we did a thing at night, pretty simple. A kind of liturgical deal. One of our theological professors prepared a deal, and it's very high church, where he would read something, they repeat back. We had 15th century church art that we've all thrown out, up on slides and things like that. I had a lady friend of mine in Indianapolis that made a wine jar and a bread tray, and she made every one of these kids a special Holy Grail cup. And at the end of that, we had communion together, and did the, you know, they are still coming and saying, when can we do that some more? It's very meaningful in our life, because, I mean, it's basically Lord's Supper on Sunday night, but we gathered around and we told our faith stories and things like that. Well, we don't do that. And I mean, typically we try to get through with communion as fast as we can. And I believe it may be the most important thing that we do on Sunday, probably. Well, if we can give them some experiences like that, it might be more relevant to them. And once again, you guys know a church is a machine, basically. We got it rolling, and to change something, or to do something different, man, it just hurts. It takes time. And even if it's just methodology, I'm not advocating we change our theology or doctrine, but our methodology is, it's killing our kids. Actually, it's not, because they're just leaving from our churches. Young people respond to accountability groups and mentoring relationships, though there is an inadequate number of committed adults who are willing to lead them. Bottom line, you don't get anything else out of the next 2 or 3 days. If you could get back to doing mentoring, and there's a good old word in the Bible called discipleship. We don't use that much. It was kind of messed up in the 70s and 80s by part of our fellowship, and we all freaked out and we run from it. But good old discipleship, it's in the Great Commission. It's commanded that we do it, and we're going to get busted because we're not doing it. But if we can get back to discipling our kids, I ask all of my students, how many of you, the day you were baptized, how many of you were discipled after you were baptized? I've been there 10 years. Zero. I mean, it's just, you get baptized, and some of you might get the little gold book with the certificate, and, you know, Billy was baptized on October the 12th, and at such and such a church or whatever, and that's kind of, go get them. You know, I've even had parents come up to me after baptizing teenagers for 27 years, you know, and I remember in Knoxville, Tennessee, I baptized this kid, and it's one of those where you just want to hold them under till they drown, one of those kids, and let him go into heaven, because you kind of know, I mean, this kid's going to, I don't know, you know, but it's over, and his mom just came up and hugged me and said, oh, it's over. And I thought, wow, you don't even know. But we need to be doing some things like that. Okay, holding accountable, discipling kids. Next, quickly, gringos. It's in the media here. What we're hearing from Strauss and Howe and from King and from Christian Smith and Soul Searching, y'all, this is probably one of the most spiritual groups of people to come along. There's a difference in spirituality and religiosity. And so we try to make our kids religious and not spiritual. I mean, you may have to think about that one. So we need to work on that. But it's in magazines and all over the place about, you know, what teens believe and all these surveys that are going on, including, you know, I want to do this, not necessarily, I want to figure out how we can equip ourselves to do better, to reach these guys where they are. And I think we know all the answers already, which is interesting that we would still do surveys. Next slide. We're going to go through these quickly. What? We got 5 minutes. Wow. Okay. Once again, you can download this or I'll send it to you. Some outcomes here. Next slide. Person. Keep going. This is King's study. Keep going. Keep going. You can look at these later. This comes from Strauss and Howe. It also comes from a millennial study done by the United Methodist Church. Largest generation. Tons of kids in this generation of millennials. The Tiger effect is from those of you that play golf, or even if you don't play golf, you know who Tiger Woods is, probably. But it's this pressure to perform. If you see Strauss and Howe and see the cartoons later on, and if you go to their website, it's this, we're the best, you're okay, but I'm better. We're the generation that's going to save the world. It's this deal where, you know, I've got this soccer kid, and he's played soccer, and he's 6 years old, and he's out there picking dandelions while they're playing in the field and all, but he kicks the ball two or three times, and he comes over, and I go, you're Pele. Oh, wow. Or you're, what's that guy's name? Beckham, you know, and all that. And the fact is, he's a loser. I mean, not really. He's your kid, so he's not a loser. But he's never going to be Pele or whatever, but I'm setting him up to be Michael Jordan or Pele. And that's not, you know, And there's a whole chapter about that, of how we set our kids up to fail, and we put this pressure on them to keep doing and getting stuff that's not going to be relevant in their life. The new gender gap advantage women. That's a pretty interesting concept, and it's going to be very interesting as we deal with the women's roles issues in our church. And as we see, we're seeing more and more girls come to Oklahoma Christian, and I know Lipscomb and Abilene, I've checked with them, to be youth ministers. And they're not doing it to say, I want to be the man at your church. Everyone at IDOT says, I want to go to church as a youth minister, guy, and I want to work with just the girls. I mean, they're not trying to, in our fellowship, say, I've got to be the head dog or whatever. They're probably more capable than most of our guys, very relational and all, but they just want to be in ministry and work with female girls. I think it's a great blessing, and churches are hiring them, so that's great. Art as a window to the world. I am not artsy. I start shaking when I get around these people, but I also realize it's a medium that we have to use and address. Now, in our fellowship, we don't have stained glass windows, we don't have crosses, we don't have any of that stuff, but our kids are flocking to these things because art speaks to them, music speaks to them, things like that. Well, how can we bring, can we do that in our fellowship, and how can we do it? So that may be something we can talk about. Multi-ethnic, you know, it's just, I mean, we're the fourth largest Spanish-speaking country in the world. I love what Randy Harris says. We wouldn't go to them, so God's bringing them to us, you know. Amazing. There might not be a tomorrow. I remember growing up in Savannah, Georgia in 1958, we had our nuclear bomb drill. Here, we're in this little school, and they said, okay, in case of nuclear attack, single file, we march out of the classroom, we line up on the hall, and we bend down with our head touching the wall like that, and that's going to help us if there's a nuclear attack. But we had those drills. We were ready if we ever got bombed with a nuclear bomb. But they've had Columbine and Oklahoma City and the bomb, 9/11 and school shootings and things like that. And I mean, that's a very real kind of deal. There's another word if you don't get anything, the hope word. We are ambassadors, I think, and part of that is sharing hope, that there is a hope. If you read the book of Acts, when Paul's not talking about the resurrection, his next word is usually hope, or the hope of the resurrection. It's all about that, and we need to be sharing that. Another good thing about millennial kids and postmodern, especially if you're into postmodern, it's only going to last 500 years, and we'll be done with that. But the whole thing about relationships, that's what it, bottom line, it's about hanging out with kids. I love Young Life, K-Life, and those things. If you have that ministry in your town that you're at, you should go hang out with those guys and learn how to do hanging out ministry. That's what it's about. It takes time, though. It's easier to sit in your office and do computer programs and chart your kids' growth on a computer and sit there and just do that instead of going and hanging out with kids. But we need to be working on that. Quickly, Gringo, next. Okay, keep going. Okay, keep going. You guys can read these later. Here's some cartoons. We're going to do these quickly, so get your photographic memories going. Dribble, pass, shoot, and score. Once again, that's that driven kind of deal. Next. Down on the end here, we're tired of asking questions. Let's go do it. I have kids going to Honduras with me. They go one time. I just had two of my students come back and say, okay, we're ready. We're going to sell it all, give it all up, and you're going to take us to Honduras. And so I already have one girl down there full-time that did it. She's been there 4 years. I've got a married couple moving down in August. They're giving it all up. They got a great business. I had two students come back last week and say, all right, we're going to work 2 years and we're going, you know, and so, you know, getting kids into doing things and helping people might actually get them back into doing kingdom kind of work. Next. The big step. Let's do national service first. I mean, the whole service thing, within itself, let me say this. There's another book called Serving with Eyes Wide Open by David Livermore. Please don't go on a mission trip ever again in your life till you read that book and make sure that you're doing something before you go, something while you're there, and when you come back. Because if you're not, somebody's phone's ringing. You're missing the deal about going on mission trips. Next. The whole internet and technology kind of deal. You know, you see people texting, you know, and, what's your name? Sister? What's your name?
What? How old are you?
17. Do you text? About how many a day, maybe? Quite a few. Okay. I saw this. We had a guy come speak at Winterfest this year. He's a great brother. He was born with no arms. His name's Chet McDaniel. He's awesome. He's a worship leader at a church in Dallas, Texas area, Fort Worth area. He's about this tall. He travels mostly in a wheelchair or whatever. But he was backstage while we were doing something else before he came on stage. He reaches up with his foot. Now, he has no arms. Reaches up, takes his cell phone out, and he's texting with his toes. Is that cool? I can't do it with my thumbs, but anyway. Most watched generation here, next. Two girls from soccer practice going to piano, 5 minutes. You know, what do you do with this free time? This whole thing about driven. I'm writing a little deal for Chap Clark to go in the book Hurt, if you've not read that. It's a good read, and what they're trying to do now is take Hurt and make it into a parent kind of friendly book instead of research. And so there's a few of us writing some practical things to go with. And my chapter is the overstressed adolescent, and this is that kind of stuff. You know, get your kid to baseball, get him to soccer, get him to skating, get him to whatever. You know, if you got time, running by church maybe or something like that. Very overworked. Next. The even greater generation, next. You're okay, I'm perfect, next. All these kids, the starting line thing, next. A couple of things you'll find in Strauss and Howe stuff is trends. That's their forte. They are incredibly predicted. Their predictability is pretty right on. Kids not watching a lot of TV, and we would go, yes, great. They're finally away from the idiot tube. But then the next slide. They're just changing methods, and they're online, which is interesting. I always ask how many of them have internet in their bedroom or cable TV in their bedroom, and I tell parents, if you do that, you're an idiot. You are just an idiot for setting your kid up to fail. in their bedroom like that. And so that's a whole new issue. If you come to Oklahoma Christian or Lipscomb or any of our other colleges, and I mean, we start thinking late what we can do to help guys and girls in their struggles and all. We got guys coming that are already so steeped in pornography and things like that. It's just unbelievable. And you would think, who was at home when all this happened? Next. We're going to be looking at some of these books with you, and you can write these down. Next. Wise Up to Teens. That's Peter Zolo. I was telling you about Teen Research Unlimited. Every 2 years he takes all that data, puts it in a book, and thousands of companies that want all these $460 billion of teen income and influence that they have on income to spend, they buy this book. It tells you what to make something out of, what color, what it should feel like, what it should sound like. If you're going to do anything in marketing with teenagers, you need to get that book. Next, I love this slide, and I'm going to quit with this and run, and these guys will take some questions from you. I'll be back tomorrow to show you the information from the pilot study that we got of Church of Christ Kids. You saw the title slide, Is Jesus the Way, the Truth, and the Life? And when I asked that question to our baptized Church of Christ teens, I was blown away. And that sets a tone for us if we don't even have a foundation of Jesus with our teenagers, we got some problems to deal with and some challenges. So I'll be back in the morning at 9. Thousands of people will be here, and we'll go over that. So let me turn this over to Tim and Lee.
I went ahead and came up here because the sound guy told me if I go in front of the speakers like Dudley did, I'd get in trouble. Don't want to give a whole lot of feedback, that kind of stuff. This afternoon, just to kind of whet your appetite a little bit and that kind of stuff, bring your friends that are here. We need some feedback from teenagers this afternoon. We really, when Bobby and Jason started talking to us a little bit about doing this, and it's played up, as you guys saw, as a parent youth worker forum, we really want it to be that. We're going to fly through some resources this afternoon, but some of the stuff, it's so fresh that he's got to go teach class at the OC. No, it's at OC, not the OC. But anyway, it's so fresh that I really haven't had a time to flesh it out with my own teenagers. I have a 16-year-old foster daughter that lives with me that, as I've been working through some of the stuff getting ready to talk to some of you, I'm like, I've got to talk to Britt about this. I've got to see where she is on this and some of those kind of things. So please come back and please bring your friends at 2, and we'll do some of that. We'll start off with a little video clip, and then we're also going to highlight some of the other resources by Chap Clark and some of the others, Mueller. There's a book by Mueller, Youth Culture 101, that basically I'm going to go back and tell my parents, either get the book and work through it, I'll help you, or go to the other church. Because it's that serious, it's that much information that is so good that we're going to have to incorporate that into parenting. And so I've been doing youth ministry starting next week. I start my 30th year. And one of the things that all of us say is, when I was in high school, those of you who are millennials have the right to say this back to us, it's not your high school. Because youth ministry that I was doing 30 years ago is not the same animal. Now, please understand that I was never one of those, and I want to shut up here and let you guys react to what Dudley was saying. Tim may have some things, too, and we know that some of you have other classes you want to get off to. We're not rushed, so if you want to talk to us afterward on the side, whatever, that's fine. We'll also be over at the NCYM booth in the pavilion, so you can come see us there as well. But things are so different. I never was one of those that thought that I was the social activities director or the fun and games director. But even so, youth ministry that I was doing then is not youth ministry that I'm doing today. And so it's significantly different. You want to say something about that real quick?
Preach on.
Okay. All right. questions, comments, concerns that Dudley Rose. I mean, I know you flew through that stuff really quick, and we're going to – the content part, my intent at least, you know, what Tim does is what Tim does this afternoon. But I plan to fly through, you know, my resources real quick. I'm going to give you the highlights, try to get you to want to go buy the stuff and work through it, and we can open some dialogue, and we'll be glad for you to be in contact with us. You can find all of us on the ncym.org website real easy if you're not familiar with NCYM, and or if your youth workers are not familiar with NCYM, there's time to repent, and you know, so please do that. So please throw stuff at us. We'll do our very best. Yes, sir. Yeah. In the last 30 years, what is the biggest change that has taken place in youth ministry? Well, I'm not sure that you can nail it to one, but I would say the biggest frustration for me personally is the fractured lifestyle. Complete family, school, events, all of those things, you know, schedule something. You know, when I started in youth ministry, if I scheduled something, everybody showed up. And if they didn't show up, they got reamed by the rest of the group. Where were you, dude? You know, what's going on? What are you thinking? Aren't you a Christian anymore? Now you schedule an event and you just pray, you know, that somebody shows up. I mean, classic example, right? I mean, we've overloaded, you know, probably with classes and that kind of stuff. We found that out at NCYM this year. For adults, we had too many class offerings, and so people were going, I don't know where to go. And so some of them didn't go, you know, and so that was, you know, a little bit of an issue. But I think that's the biggest thing. And the 5-minute cartoon that Dudley put up there, man, that's reality. You know, be honest with me. How many of you don't sit there, you do nothing for 3 minutes, and you don't start feeling guilty? We've got to fill every waking moment. You know, I've got to have some drugs to, you know, to get through the next 30 seconds here. Yeah, the energy drinks. Yeah, that's a classic example. We got to fill it. We got to keep it going. And so I think the fragmentation is the biggest thing. And so yeah, that affects everything I do. You know, the way I teach, you better do snippets because you're not going to keep them for 30 minutes. You know, you got to keep moving. It's, you know, fast paced. You know, look at some of the books that are coming out. Some of you are going, man, this thing is... it's all fragmented. It doesn't make sense to me. It probably doesn't, but you better learn to think that way because that's where your kids are. Okay. Yeah, somebody else. Does that kind of help? Okay.
I think on Dudley's slides, he'd mentioned that relationships are
repeat
core.
Oh, I'm sorry.
How do you keep kids plugged into youth group and feeling that that's important? Relationships are really key, and at least in my youth ministry, and I think probably most of us do as well, we really work on creating those relationships. I've been in youth ministry over 15 years and just working through that. I tell you, you know, I sat with a girl last night in my office after class, and she was crying about some issues, and we talked through that. And a lot of times they won't go to their parents. A lot of times they won't even go to other people they might respect in the church. And so just different ways that you can build relationship and make them feel that it is important to be there. Especially that senior high group. We work real hard at creating a leadership mentality among our senior high group that they need to reach down to that middle school and junior high and invite those kids to youth activities, invite them to Bible class, invite them to different things that are going on, just so that those young kids who may get left out of the loop for whatever reason, sixth graders, seventh graders, eighth graders, feel like they're important. That phone call from a senior high person, they can do so much more than I can do with a phone call. I can make them feel guilty somewhat in some degree, but you get a senior calling an eighth grader, that eighth grader is going to be there because that meant something special. So that's kind of the way we work it, just creating a leadership kind of team among the senior high group. And not everybody participates, but you just take what you can because of the fragmentation.
Yeah, one word, ownership. You know, I don't have a youth group of 400 like Dudley does. I've got a church of 400, and our kids know that they're important. They run the sound. Our most regular communion commenter is one of my teenagers. You know, and so we have said, you know, this is your church. You know, for years, 30 years ago, the comment was, our children are the church of tomorrow. My campaign for 30 years has been, what if tomorrow doesn't come? They're the church of today and tomorrow and yesterday, hopefully. Okay. And so, you know, I think that's really important. just a quick story, a classic example. I think this is a great thing that our elders, actually it was our search committee did, maybe accidentally, but maybe intentionally. They get the clue, they get the message. Middle class Sunday morning, we're looking for a preacher, getting ready to look for a preacher. Our preacher had been there 20 years. And so we're getting ready to go through that whole process. Now, we've got one in place, and he's wonderful, and God blessed us, and all that kind of stuff. But make a long story short, the committee, including an elder and a deacon, got together, and they talked and said, we need some input from the church as to what we want to ask and what we're looking for, bless you, and all that kind of stuff. And so in the middle of class on Sunday morning, in walks an elder and a deacon. Now, you want to, you know, throw a youth minister's head in a spin, do that in the middle of class when it's a deep discussion. I mean, we were having one of the best theological discussions we'd had in years in this class, and in come Bill and Joe. Okay, did somebody die? You know, am I getting fired in the middle of class? You know, I mean, all of the, you know, wonderful ideas, you know, somebody texted their parents and they didn't like the discussion that was going on. You know, I mean, all of those things, okay, we're paranoid. And so, long story short, you know, they said, you know, got time. And so I kind of cut things a little bit short. And they said, we're getting ready to start this process and we're going to write these questions and stuff, but we needed input from you before we wrote the questions and before we decided what to ask the candidates. So would you give us some feedback? Would you do that now before you leave class? Would you write down what you think? And here's our email addresses. Please be in touch with us, yada, yada, and that kind of stuff. We gave the church forms to fill out after every candidate that we brought in, three. The church feedback was about 55%. The youth group feedback was about 93%. Little thing, but what did they think? And by the way, you know whose preacher Gilbert is? He's their preacher, because they help pick him. How do you get them to show up for the stuff that's not just fun? Pray for a crisis. I'm serious as I can be. The kids, as you saw on the slides, if they see the value, will do it. Now, everybody's yard needs to be raked. I'm from Indiana now. Everybody's driveway needs to be shoveled. But that's common. That's normal. That's average. 2 months ago, just north of us, the town flooded. I mean, it got quacked good. And I don't know if any of you are familiar with Church of Christ Disaster Relief Incorporated or not. They're an incredible group. I was sitting at my desk, phone call, and, hey, Lee, we got a truck ready to head your way. Where do you want it? You know, I knew they needed help. I knew, you know, they hadn't even evaluated the situation yet or any of that kind of stuff. I was like, I'm sure we want it, but I don't know. And they said, we'll figure it out because, you know, we're ready to send this thing. So we find out the truck's coming. I shoot out an email and said, you know, we need people to show up, help unload this truck, get it, you know, distributed, all that kind of stuff. Within 30 minutes, I know they were at school and on the internet, but that's the way it is. Within 30 minutes, I had two kids email me, can you shoot me an email letter so that I can get out of class so that I can come help unload that truck? I had kids crying because they couldn't come help. But so you got to sell it. You know, what's the value of it? It's not just, you know, and when you go and help those other people, when you go rake their leaves, when you shovel their driveways, when you bake the cookies for them or whatever, the notes are nice. Bring them to class and let them talk to the kids because that fleshes it out. You know, now it's like, dude, Miss Sally really liked us coming and doing that. We got to do that again. So you've got to raise the value of it. You know, what is the place for that? It's not, and guilt is a great indicator, but it's a horrible motivator. Okay? And so, you sell it because it's what Jesus wanted us to do. I think we're getting ready to be running out.
Let's shut down with a prayer. And if you guys want to talk to us more, we'd be happy to meet you at the back here or at the booth, at the NCYM booth. Let's close with a prayer again. We'll be back at 2 o'clock and then 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. God, we thank you for the opportunity you've given us to get together here this weekend, beginning today. And we just know that there are a lot of great things that are going on here around the campus, and we just pray that you would give us insight and wisdom as to what classes to go to, what speakers to hear, and that your spirit would be in the middle of all of this, that your name be glorified in all things. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Thanks for coming, guys. Bring your friends.